Hello and welcome to the Next 100 Days podcast. My name is Graham Arrowsmith.
And my name's Kevin Appleby. So, Graham, wealth management today. We've talked about wealth management from a UK perspective a lot of times, but today we're looking at wealth management from a US perspective.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this. I mean, I literally just put the phone down on somebody who wanted to raise £2 million from high net worth investors. And that's one of the things that one of my businesses does. So basically, but when he said, do you know everybody who's on the list? Well, no, no, it's not. No, I don't.
Nice. I'm thinking, okay,
well, I'm not for you then. Anyway, but leaving that to one side, we have got the wonderful Rebecca. I'm going to say Ire. Is that right?
Ire.
Ire.
Clearly, I'm Jamaican.
Yeah. Well, no, you don't look like that. You could be actually, because lots of people come from Jamaica. But Rebecca, welcome to the Next 100 Days podcast.
Thank you.
Now, you're currently living in Austin, Texas, lovely part of the world. And, you know, I just want to see the guitars and all the other kind of musical instruments in the background, but there isn't any.
There is one.
Is there?
It's sunrise here, so it's a little dark. There's a guitar over there.
Oh, I can. Okay.
Right behind the yoga swing, which every financial advisor needs in their office. Like, this will make us better humans.
I just thought you were living in a tent. I didn't want to say, but I mean, it did look a little bit kind of like you've moved into somebody's house without paying, and you've put up a tent sort of thing.
There's a big population in America now that thinks we should own nothing and be happy. Well, and I am actually, surprisingly, not opposed to that.
Okay. Well, we might differ on that. But however, the nice thing, you live in Austin, and that doesn't surprise me. There's a lot of people in Austin who probably share your view, but the wider Texas would hate that view. But the point is, you know that as well as me. But the whole idea of wealth management and building enough money to, shall we say, to retire on, that's been your thing. So tell us more.
It has been my thing. So you see now. Now I'm going to tell you. So I have seven children, six grandchildren. So I am I'm a grandma, though they call me Mimi.
Yeah.
And what I'm going to tell you is my kids tell me, they keep me hip. They keep me in the lingo. So what I'm going to tell you is when I say own nothing and be happy, you need to hear it from my perspective before you just jump to the patriarchal understanding that you probably have. So, you know, down with the patriarchy, let the lady speak. You know,
go on then. You go on. She's going to boss me about all this.
Let the lady speak.
She's going to boss you about. Yes, she is.
If we have to do. Go on then, Rebecca.
So I was raised, and y'all probably remember this, I was raised in the 80s. I was raised in South Dakota on a 3,000-acre ranch where there were more cattle than people.
Yeah.
But in the 80s in the States, that was when Willie Nelson was singing for all of us, right? And so we didn't win. We fought the law, and the law won. We lost the farm. Four generations of our family lost the ranch. So that was my first introduction to owning things, to finance. My dad knew crops and cattle. He didn't know money. He knew to take a big loan and try to pay it off. He didn't know what to do if that didn't happen. So that was my, as a 10-year-old, that was my introduction into finance. And so I would say, you know, some of us, myself included, learn financial rules through the school of hard knocks. I happen to have education as well, but a lot of my story is cautionary. So I know that the pain of not having, and the fact is, and I would imagine this is probably true where y'all are as well as here, is that money defines us. I'm not saying that's right, but it determines where we live. The fact that I live on 30 acres in Austin, Texas, that is money. It determines what we eat and how we eat and our mental health, our physical health, everything revolves around money. So having options, when I was in college, I had a professor who said, "What is wealth?" And I said, "Having a lot of money." And he said, "No, wealth is having enough money to do what you want to do when you want to do it." And so when I say own nothing and be happy, I'm going along with the Rockefellers, right? That's what the Rockefellers said as well. Own nothing, control everything, which again, I'm a woman. Of course, that appeals to me, no question, obviously. Oh, nothing. Control everything. Be happy. You don't need to own it. This house, like y'all own a house. All my kids want to own a home, and I'm like, darling, yes, you do. Except for when something breaks, you have to pay to fix that. When the roof needs repaired, you have to pay to do that. When three air conditioners go out because we need multiple in Texas, that's on you, darling. Are you sure? Because you have it kind of sweet where you can just pick up the phone and go, hey, it's broke. Fix it. Right? So wealth looks so different to so many people. And the thing that Blue Sky does is we say, what does wealth look like to you? And whatever that is, there's a path to it. Let's reverse engineer that and figure out how to get there.
Well, that's a really good answer and a really good comeback. And to be honest with you, I feel like I should dip out for the rest of this podcast and you two just chat away there, because clearly I've got the wrong end of the stick here. What you're saying is that to become wealthy, you don't want to own anything, but you want to control things. Okay, how does that actually work?
I mean, some people want to own things, right? So America is still, well, especially Texas, still the wild, wild west. Like, do some people want to own things? And that's the idea. Absolutely. But I think, and maybe y'all find this in your world as well. I think that's Gen X and above. We're owners, man. We want to, we got to own it. My children, on the other hand, they don't care. That's not a thing to them. They know the financial deck is stacked against them, and it is. You know, my children and grandchildren, and these are American statistics, right? So in America, you could buy a new home in the year 2000 for $165,000. Today, average house cost is $500,000.
Okay, we've seen very similar in the UK.
Is it? Oh, good.
Don't think the multiple's quite as big, but there is a difficulty for the first-time buyer to get the mortgage, to
That's
get the
it.
home. They use
Because
money as a deposit, and for a lot of people, that's unachievable. And you've
right.
got the odd situation of a lot of people actually paying more in rent than they'd have to pay in mortgage, but they can't get on the property ladder.
Right. So because salaries didn't match, right? Salaries in America in 2000 were $40,000. Today they're 54. There's something wrong. Our kids are behind the eight ball and we need to fix it. It's
Okay, so
different today.
let me just go through this in a sort of a logical way. You kind of grew up in the 80s. Kevin and I probably the decade before. So in terms of growing, well, the first part of our existence. And there's definitely this kind of thing that you earn some money, get a mortgage, get a house, get on the property ladder, as Kevin has just said. Now, if I had my time again, I said, actually, that's not the smartest thing to do with the money that I'm bringing in. I'd rather somehow control or somehow have access to a home without paying. And the logic of that is renting it. And that would have worked possibly not this decade, maybe not even last decade, but before that. Now, as Kevin's saying, I'd be overpaying for the facility of having a house. It's not my house. I can't really build an extension on it. So if I have an extra child or an extra five children, I can't build an extension because it's not my property. Unless I can go to the owner of the property and say, I want an extension and I'll put in, but I want you to put your money in. I'm not quite sure how that works. I'm struggling. I'm really trying not to say that your viewpoint isn't cogent. It must be, but I'm trying to look at it from the point of view of your children. How could they go through the rest of their life not getting on the property ladder and then somehow figuring out how to control the assets they're going to be living in and having and so forth? So in other words, they're preserving the wealth that they're earning through their talents, income, all that kind of stuff. I'm just not making the connection. Maybe I'm just dim. Kevin's the clever one.
I don't know, Kevin, what do you think?
I was coming to something similar, Graham, because you do whatever you do, you've got to pay for whatever place you're living in. One of the nice things about owning your own house is that by the time you get to a certain age, you've probably paid off any of the loans and you get into that position that you have all the benefits of living in the house. And apart from the repair bills, it doesn't actually cost you anything.
Well, the government that we've got now want to take a chunk out of it every damn year. So, but that's another story. But you know, don't vote socialist. But what I could say is that you know, truth is, I'm st I need. It's clear, Rebecca, that you've figured this out, and you're tantalising us. You're kind of teasing us with the answer, but we just don't have the intellect to get to onto the same
Do y'all have children?
pitch. Yeah. Both of us have got three, Kevin.
Two.
Two
And
for you, three for me. Yeah.
how old are your children?
Well, the youngest for me is 32, and the oldest is 38. So.
Yes, yeah, same sort of age range here.
So my experience, and I'm hesitating a little bit because American finance is my specialty, and so I'm conversations sometimes I have with my friends on that side of the pond, let's just say it that way. It's di like the rules are different, right? So what my experience with my children is they don't think about things work
Oh,
the way
right.
I did, right? They
Right, yeah.
when you say some point in the future you'll have it paid off, in America that's at least 30 years. And my kids are like,
Yeah.
no, 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 no,
Similar.
no, no, no. I don't want to work past 40. What are you kidding me? No. You know, my 27-year-old son has three children. He came to me the other day and he said, "Ma, I've been doing this full-time work thing for like 7 years. I'm tired. I don't want to." And I'm like, "Guess what, kitten? You're not going to be a YouTube star. Turn yourself around and go back to work. That's
Yeah.
adulting." They don't think about it like we do, and they don't think about wealth the way we do either. So I'm going to answer your question from two different perspectives. One is the building of wealth. Like when I was a kid, there was one thing to do: get a job, get a job, get a job.
Oh,
But if
definitely.
and I don't exactly, I think I have a basic concept of what the housing ladder is. We don't have a housing ladder here; we just buy a house. But we don't. I don't. Whatever. Anyway, so what we might be able to do here is, you know, you buy a house, but you have one room of it Airbnb. You have a side hustle. You have so you can build wealth. You can build wealth in those ways. But here's what I'm going to tell you from a wealth management perspective: it's not the making of the money that's the problem. It's how we use the money. And most of us, you know, we mentioned the Rockefellers earlier. Most of us don't know the rules of money. We don't know. We can make money like bank. I was a foster mom for 10 years. I had 37 kids in and out of my home. And when I met with the parents, you know, you get to meet them, you take them to visits, and you chat a little bit while you're waiting. But it wasn't making money that was a problem for them. It was keeping money that was a problem for them. So when I work with my younger clients, even my older clients to a certain extent, what we do is say, okay, this is what you're making. How can we leverage that? And so we use a variety of different tools for especially younger clients to leverage money because that's what wealthy families do.
Yeah.
They don't spend their money. They leverage it into something else. So now we can use simple tools like for my grandchildren will never pay for anything out of pocket ever, and not because I'm wealthy. That's not it. They will not pay for anything ever because when they were born, I took a very simple tool like a indexed universal life insurance policy, and I said, "Hey, when they're 65, I want them to have $5 million." Well, when that's 65 years away, it's very inexpensive to do that for a child. And what that allows them to do is when they get to 18, whatever's in there, they leverage that to pay for their college. They don't pay for college, they pay their own fund back, right? When they buy a house, they don't pay for that. They leverage that money to do it. So simple, easy, something you should have anyway, right? You should be protected anyway, but you utilize a tool in a little different way. And you can do that with tools like that. You can do it with, in America, setting up private pensions. You can do it in funds, mutual funds, and a little bit of crypto, although I am still one of the cautious. It's here to stay. I'm not saying it's like the internet, it's going to be gone tomorrow, but you leverage things when it's the frosting, not the cupcake, right? You handle the cupcake first. Now I have something to leverage, and you move from there. So that's just one strategy that you could utilize aside from let's look at how we make money differently. I think the world is coming right along there, but those financial rules, not everybody knows them.
It's a bit like your explanation is a bit like a jigsaw that's gradually sort of the pieces are starting to surface. They're becoming less, I don't know, less unclear. And so they are okay. But I can't have my life back. We were the product of our time, and Kevin and I are similar in some ways, eerily so in some ways. But the whole idea of this is that we've got to mid-60s, and basically we've followed a certain pathway. Now, I kind of like what you're saying. I think I'd find it fairly uncomfortable. But I think it's just do it, Graham. Just, and my kids, I don't know. I think they've all found a way to get new, additional sources of income. That's the one thing that we've kept, you know. They've all run a bus, all run a business. One's a lawyer, another one works for an American company, and the third one runs his own company, a cybersecurity company. But he also goes up to Scotland and digs holes. So he's not just fixed on. He's, you know, like Bob the Builder, Kevin. But I mean, you know, he takes a big digger and digs holes, and he's proud of it, and he loves it. And you know, but it gives him a good source of income. I love the fact that they've got all of that in them. I love the fact they can go and find work in lots of different ways. Sophie's a, you know, divorce lawyer, but she's also running two other companies. So, you know, and really, and you know, sometimes she looks a little bit stressed, but at the end of the day, she's, you know, beautiful young girl, and she's married, and you know, before long she'll be hopefully producing another grandchild. So the whole idea for me is that yes, I've given them something, but you're starting a lot earlier. And so I think your grandchildren, your children, have been blessed because you're in their life, because effectively you're showing them a way to almost like use other people's money.
That's the idea. So here's the difference. And I love everything that like when your kids are entrepreneurs, isn't that a beautiful thing? I
I like
love
it. Yeah.
that, right? So
Yes.
the difference between utilizing financial rules and just teaching your kids to be an entrepreneur or work hard, both are brilliant. But I know, and as a mother, as a parent, this matters, right? I know contractually guaranteed my children and my grandchildren will never struggle for money. They will never get to be my age or y'all's age and go, I don't know. I don't know. And now we have generational wealth, not because we work hard, but because that's our family legacy. We have generational wealth, period. And are we Elon Musk or Trump? Do we have gold hand? No, we don't. No, we don't. But we will never. I got made it through university on like college, ramen and Mountain Dew. I worked three jobs. I was, struggling. They won't. They'll struggle in a different way.
Mountain Dew's quite sugary, I think. No, I think you obviously didn't put any weight on, so but nonetheless, for me, it would have given me more diabetes. So I mean, you know, I can't have it.
There's a reason it's illegal in the UK.
Is
Oh
it? I
gosh,
didn't
is
know
it
that.
really?
I didn't
Yeah,
know
yeah.
that. Is it?
You cannot buy Mountain Dew in the UK because it does not meet UK food standard.
All
Oh,
right.
but
Okay.
y'all are just living in a communist world. Shouldn't you be
For
able to
sure.
like pick that yourself?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, buyer beware and all that, Kevin. I mean, at the end of the day, though, I'd look at it and think, oh, no, that's just a tub of sugar. I mean, you know, leave it alone. Leave it to the
It's full.
Americans.
Full
And you see,
octane. That's what we call it. Full
the thing
octane.
is, Rebecca, in America, you've kind of got people like you who are who've aged very gracefully and basically, you know, slim, beautiful, all that kind of stuff. And then you've got people who are like, well, I mean, they're big, big people, you know, and it's one or the other, it seems. I mean, I don't know if there's anybody in the middle, you know, so I don't know whether or not the world and, you know, whether it's pharma companies or whether it's fast food companies have destroyed so many people's lives. I know it's attractive to eat something quick and on the go, and, but if it becomes a habit, crikey. You know, I don't know. I mean, generational wealth is one thing, but do you look after their health?
Do I look after their
well,
health?
Do you have the same sort of strategy for wealth, health, all that, you know, religion, all that kind of stuff? Do you have more than just a wealth strategy, or is it just a wealth strategy?
So Blue Sky Financial is just that. Now, what I'm going to tell you is that we, you know, our tagline is big enough to handle every need, small enough to know your name. So we are a boutique firm. We're very small. Now, we do things like Medicare and health insurance and, you know, estate planning, trusts, which is another way to own nothing, control everything, right? So we do all of those things. But to your point, I think that, you know, especially in America, do we have that? Now, you look at me now. I am a woman of extremes, thus seven children. However, I wasn't always, right? When I gained 20 pounds with every child and never took it off. So at my highest weight, I was 300 and something, right? So
right. Okay.
When we know better, we do better. And so you say pharmaceutical companies and you say these things, but I think we have cooperated, right? I'm
oh,
no
yeah,
Western
yeah.
medicine. You go into the doctor and you say, "Doc, something's wrong. Give me a pill to fix it." Well, you could just exercise and eat better and that would work too, but a pill works faster. So part of that health side is saying, I'm not happy like this. I don't want to be broke. I don't want to feel crappy. I don't want to have the highlight of my game playing World of Warcraft or something. I had a client earlier in the week that I was talking to, very sweet couple, 62-ish, and their son lives with them. He's 32 and he it's something like Dungeons and Dragons. Because it's not just online, but he paints figurines and he's got hundreds. He's 32 years old.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
this is what eventually you wake up and go, this is not, there's got to be more than this, right? There's got to be more than this. And for us now, and again, there's a difference in our worlds, but when I work with clients who are my own generation or older, now the game is we are in retirement partnership. We have a silent partner, but a very bossy one in our retirement, right? Uncle Sam for us, the God save the queen, the king. I don't know. I'm American, whatever. I'm sure y'all pay taxes, right? So
I won't want the king managing my finances. That's for sure. And worse still, the socialists that are in power, but they'll be out before long. But the beauty of our country so far is it until the last 2-3 years is that it has been I think respected throughout the world for its its ability to create things and change things, and you know, at one stage we're the biggest entity in the world, not now, but for me I think we still have an entrepreneurial spirit. There's a lot going for people in this country, and I think we've got a lot of good things. I mean, the NHS people call I still think the NHS is a bit like it's bloated, and I think it needs to be reformed in some way, because it is important, but it doesn't mean to say that we have to subjugate everything else to it. And I think for me, there are things that we can do differently for a positive future. I love the Americans. I really do. I've been several times, and I just want, you know, I like what you're saying. I like how you can go along to a client and help them change the outcome of their future by doing things that they're probably thinking, what? I mean, is that the kind of reaction? Do they say, we can do what? And it's not known to them, because otherwise they'd have been doing it already. But you come along and you say, no, you don't need to do this or that. Do it this way instead. And what is the kind of reaction when it sort of dawns on them that their life's going to change?
I get that reaction from our generation, right? So when I take a person who's 55, 60, and I say, okay, within the next 10 years, we're going to eliminate your tax burden. You're going to tell the government to kick rocks barefoot because you're never taxing me again. I'm done with you. Mm-hmm. I get that.
Yeah.
Because we're old enough to go, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. Nah. But it is true, right? We can do that. So that's a bigger proof of concept for our generation, right?
Yeah.
Younger people are, I love working with younger because they're excited. I worked with a couple earlier this month. She's 25, he's 28. Beautiful, super, just she, whatever. If I say anything about it and they see that, they're like, you're talking about me. No, anyway, super sweet couple. They want to retire. I said, when do you want to retire? And they're like, we cannot imagine working past 40. They have a little saved, and I said, well, what kind of an income do you want at 40? And they said, well, we need to make at least $100,000 a year. And I said, well, $100,000 a year now is not $100,000 a year in 12 years. That's going to be a big difference. So here's what I'm going to tell you guys is that's 12 years for him. It's going to be 12 years of sacrifice. We can do it. And I'm going to tell you what it's going to take to get there. And they were excited by that. They're like, tell us what to do. We have debt. How can we get out of it? How can we leverage our way out of the debt and then build from there? And they're so excited to know I'm actually not behind the eight ball. There is a path forward. I'm not, pardon the American crassness. I'm not screwed. I'm not. There's a way for my family, for my children to get there. They love it. They're excited by it.
I
And
just
it's
don't.
us old fogies, right? We need to go,
You can't
no.
associate yourself with Kevin and I. We're a good 10 years older than you, so at least. But I'm well. You're right. You're not going to say. You know, you should never ask a woman her age. So how much do you weigh then? I mean, so the trick, one or the other. But it's you know, from my point of view, I think I would have loved to have had you in our lives. Maybe I don't know, just before the kids came along, maybe that would have because we were fairly young with the kids, like Kevin, you know, we're in the 20s and so forth. But so it would have been such a radical change to the way in which we were planning our lives. I mean, we can't go back in time, we know that, but for these kids who are saying, I've got a bit of debt, I don't want to be working after 40. Well, I mean, is that a bit of a dream? Isn't it more likely they're going to work after 40? Or are you as confident as you've made them be that they're not going to work after 40?
Absolutely. No
Wow.
question. No question. I mean, here's the thing. I am not, and our team really is not your typical financial advisor. Here's the reason I can say it like that, because foundationally, you know, from a diversification perspective, you have protected assets and you have at-risk assets, right? So foundationally, first, we utilize protected contractual assets. So here's a thing not many people know, but I'm sure y'all remember in America we had the whole O.J. Simpson, you know, O.J. Simpson back in the not our proudest moment. However, when his wife's family sued him for, you know, whatever, he said, I can't, he lost, but he said, I can't pay you. I'm broke. That's what he said. So technically not broke, right? So all of his assets were in a contract that couldn't be breached by any lawsuit, could only be breached for back child support, which he didn't have. It wasn't that he was broke. It was that he had his assets in a place that couldn't be touched. So we utilize those foundational contractual tools. The reason I can look you in the eye and say yes is because I start with contracts and then, and that's the cupcake, right? Ask the fat girl. That's the cupcake. We build it here. And then everything we do with premium finance or private placement money or mutual funds or stocks, that's all the frosting. That's all. But we know, I can look you in the eye and say, I know for sure this is going to happen. It's in a contract. I know it.
What are these two lovely young kids? What are they going to do after 40? I mean, Kevin, I mean, you at 40, you were probably working for one of these big six accounting firms,
Yeah, I was working for the big.
yeah,
For
and
you, I
loving
was a
every minute.
homeschooling mother. That's what I was.
Well, yeah, and well, I don't know, 40, I can't even remember, but it would have been a corporate somewhere. Point is, they're going to get to 40, and they're going to say, "Hey, we've done it." I've got this piece of paper. Rebecca's just sent me a note, or actually somebody in Rebecca's team sent me a note, and it says, "Well done, kids. You've done the 20 years, whatever it is, and you are now free to go and what? Waste the rest of their life at 40? They've probably got 60 years to do."
Don't you find things? He loves to play ball. She loves to design clothing.
All
They'll
right, okay,
probably
that'll give him
have
another 10
kids. They'll
years.
probably travel. I mean, we all have passions, right? Passions that you don't discover your passions until you have time to discover them. That's the truth, right? I didn't get my PhD until I was 50.
50.
So, and why? Why didn't I? Because I was busy. I was busy working and raising children and educating them and doing those things. But now I can tell you, I have discovered entirely new worlds, and that there's a whole world out there that doesn't have to do with making money. And this is where we come full circle, right? To, oh, nothing, be happy. Like somebody asked me the other day, what does retirement look like to you? I'm gonna sell everything. I live in a van. That's what I want. I don't want to own anything. I just want to be free to do whatever I want. I have seven children to visit, 2 months with you, and 2 months with you, and 2 months with you. That's great.
The differences, and I'm sorry, I'm not an expert on the alternative, but basically the difference between your environment is they do have assets. They're contractually locked away from the IRS in your country. But the alternative model of don't own anything and you'll be happy in our country, the type of things they're talking about is that you will have minimum wage or you will have gruel along with that, but you won't own anything because the state will own it and tell you what you can do. Oh, and by the way, you walked across the road at a jagged angle. Right, that's the end of your Christmas bonus. Or you're on, you can't go swimming for 3 years or whatever. At the end of the day, it probably won't be exactly like that, but there is a different mentality, a Marxist mentality to the logic or the perception of not owning anything. There's the one thing that says, we'll take all your assets and we'll share it out to people who never earned them. And there's another way, which is your way, which is you'll go through a bit of pain, but at the end of it, you'll have enough assets to live the rest of your life without worry. Different. Different, completely different.
I think this is similar in our countries. Our government tells us stuff, right? They say, oh, nothing and be happy. And that means I'm going to take from you and I'm going to give you whatever I dang well please, right? In my country, when I was a young person, now I don't participate in politics very much for mental health reasons. It makes me so mad. But they said that the difference between a conservative and a liberal is that a conservative will say, I will share what I have, and a liberal will say, I will take what you have. Difference, right? Difference here. So, yes, when the government says, own nothing, be happy, you're right. You're right. And even here, that is what they mean.
I might, but I, that's why I kind of like jumped in right at the beginning.
No,
And you were
you're
right
and
to set me straight, Rebecca. I mean, we need you in our lives every day, Kevin. Or at least I need her in my life every day. So
I
yeah.
refuse to allow the government, and this is American philosophy 101, right? The government will not define. I don't care what the government says. You say it, and I reject your reality. I replace it with my own. I will own nothing because you're not going to ever touch anything that I own. I have nothing. Guess what? I own nothing. I have nothing for you to take. I have nothing for you to take. It's all in this beautiful little contract that funds whatever lifestyle I choose to have. I
So
have nothing for you to take.
you're the kind of blue
Kick
sky.
off.
I don't want to associate blue sky with O.J. Simpson.
Do you want to know the story of Blue Sky?
Go on.
Come on.
Here's the story of Blue Sky. When you have seven children, they are not all, despite being raised the same parents, same everything, they're not the same. My
No.
middle daughter, I have four daughters. She's the second, actually. She's trouble. Like from the day she was born, golly, she's just my changeling daughter. I love her. We're great friends now. But she was trouble. She moved out when she was 17. Trauma. When she moved out, I sat down with her and I said, Jules, her name is Julia. I said, what color's the sky? And she said, blue, like a sassy little teenager would. And I said, but what color's the sky in a thunderstorm? She said, black. I said, yeah, but behind the thunderstorm. She said, still blue. I said, what about in a tornado? Still blue. What about a hurricane? She's like, Ma, enough with the, I know it's blue. And I said, I know things are difficult right now, but that's me for you. I will always be there. I will always be your blue sky. I will always be on your side. We will always find a way together. Always. No matter what happens, I am your blue sky. And when we started Blue Sky Financial in 2017, the reason I came back to finance, I started in finance in college, and I came back to it because my husband was a man who did not like to go to the doctor. And he always said, what's the doctor going to say to me that I need to lose a few pounds? I already know that. I don't need somebody in white coat to tell me that. When I finally took him to the doctor because he hadn't been feeling well for a while, the doctor looked at me and said, he will never check out. And I was in my 40s homeschooling 6 children at the time. He was in complete liver failure. And he did check out a year and a half later with somebody else's liver and no legs. But that changed my perspective. So when I thought about coming back to finance and we decided to start a firm, an independent firm, that is what I want to be for my clients. We go through things. We go through divorce. We go through death. We go through desperate times. And you need a financial team behind you to say, I got you. I can't help the grief and the things that happen in life, but this financial side will never define you. Not in a negative way, never again, because we are your blue sky. That's what we do.
So, Rebecca, just winding back away from the story of blue sky.
Hi, Kevin, you're here. Yay.
I find a word in edgeways. Yeah. It's difficult.
I see. Your name's not Julia.
Rebecca, thinking about your story, you've told us that your kids and your grandkids will never go without. You've built generational wealth. Now, you've also told us other things, that you went through college doing 3 jobs. In your 40s, you're homeschooling 6 kids. So presumably not working while you're homeschooling kids, and you lose your life partner. How did you make that transition yourself to start building that generational wealth?
The hell of a thing, isn't it? I mean, I think the human spirit is super resilient. You know, I had a lot of floor days. I don't know if y'all know floor days. I call them floor days, right? Where you just get up in the morning and I have to be on the floor. Like, I can't even with this world.
Transitioned into a hammock now, isn't it?
Yes. You know, that's a fun thing, but, you find your way. I think hope is sown into our spirit. And that was I'm not going to tell you that was an easy process. And unfortunately, the beautiful part of the story is that my husband is still here. He's of course not exactly the same as he was, but he's still here. We don't work together anymore because he has a lot of pain issues now, but he's still with me. And eventually you pick your head up and go, okay, well, what am I going to make of this? You know, I tell my children, because we all have difficult times, life is going to throw you lemons. Make a lemonade empire. Make a lemonade empire. Like, eventually our spirits say, I'm not going to sit in this anymore. Let's make something of it. And life is hard. It's going to press you.
You know, Kevin, we've been really fortunate. I think your episode 502, right? So basically, to get to 500 episodes, like a weekly business show.
You guys have 502 episodes?
Well, not quite.
That's so awesome. Congratulations.
We haven't got to the end of the 502. We might have to ditch it because you've been so bad. But I mean, the end of the... No, I'm going to kid. Actually, I was just thinking earlier, Kevin, the point I was making was that the way in which Rebecca explained Blue Sky, it almost had me in tears. The truth is, you are a remarkable person. You really are. And your kids ought, if they're listening to this, they ought to prone themselves in front of you and say, thank goodness that you're in my life as a Blue Sky influence. Because I love what you're trying to do to the people that you're involved with. It's a pity you can't be involved with more people, but I guess there's only limits to what you can do. And you probably... I don't know. Do you pick and choose your clients?
At this point, I do. Mm-hmm. I do. But I have a team behind me, right? So not I mean, I am not a good fit for everyone. Let's just be clear. I am not everybody. I think we started with this, right? I'm not everybody's cup of tea. I'm a shot of whiskey. I am not. Some people like to come into a fancy financial office and they like their financial advisor to be buttoned up and very serious and let's go over all the blah 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 blah. And I'm not going to do that. I'm a vision person. Where are we going? What are we creating? What are we doing here? That's me. I'm not for everybody. I work primarily virtually. Do we have an office? Yeah. Is it a fancy office? No, it's not, because who pays for that office? My clients do. I don't need it. I don't want it. I'd rather come and have a cup of coffee with my clients in their kitchen, right? Like, I'll come to you. But I'm pretty selective about who I work with at this point, and I have a brilliant team. If I am too much of a shot of whiskey, there's somebody on the team that is much calmer and much,
I think you have to be a leader, though,
more
don't you? And you've
buttoned up.
and you, what did you call it on your LinkedIn thing? It said financial advocacy with heart, and I think that describes you extremely well, Rebecca. You've been you. Unfortunately, I'd love to keep going. So would Kevin, because he always has a question that he doesn't get time to ask. But and that's my fault. But at the end of the day, you've been an absolutely brilliant guest on the Next 100 Days podcast. Thank you for joining us.
Well, Graham, that conversation diverted into lots of different directions apart from wealth management, and a thoroughly, thoroughly interesting conversation. Now, I'm minded of something that I learned from a previous guest, and that was one Mr. John Lamerton, a long time ago. And John's catchphrase is, I do what I want, where I want, when I want, if I want, and there's probably another want in there somewhere. But what is work? What is retirement? And I think what you're aiming for is to get into that position of what John said. He's done it, and he's running a business pretty much full time, and he's got his routines and whatever. You and I talk about retiring. And you said to me, when are you going to retire, Kevin? And I say, don't know. But then I look at it another way and think, well, if I use that definition I got from John, actually, I probably retired at least 5 years ago, possibly longer ago. It's getting to that place that you're doing what you want when you want. So that to me is my takeaway from this conversation. That becomes easier if you've got some financial freedom around it. But it doesn't have to mean you've got to be financially free, because doing what you want when you want doesn't mean you're not earning money doing it.
I think we've learned some lessons from Rebecca. I think she, I just love the style and the concept of, shall we say, not owning things as opposed to controlling them. And the OG Simpson sort of reference and the way in which she helps people, you know, go from a debt laden situation to being free within, you know, less than a generation. It is a wonderful sort of opportunity. I didn't get the impression that these were all landed gentry. They're not all already made. She's making people with the way, by understanding what money is about.
Yeah.
And I think, it's been, look, she's also very personable. And this episode was incredibly warming to the heart. But I think the beauty of it is that, you know, as the head of a financial operation, I was expecting a different podcast than the one we got.
Yeah, I was too. And Graham, I'm minded of one other thing here. It's a book that a lot of entrepreneurs and so on will quote. Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Yeah.
If you want to learn more about Rebecca's attitude to life, probably go read that. And one of the things that comes over clearly in there is the difference between an asset and a liability. And our own, certainly our generation's definition of an asset might be different to the true definition. An asset is something that retains value and creates value. Now, A lot of us think of a house as an asset. But is a house an asset? A house is also a liability. Think about how much interest you paid on that mortgage. Think about all the stuff in the house that can go wrong and cost you money. Is the house an asset or is the house a liability? And go into that kind of mindset and you start getting to the bottom of what Rebecca's talking about.
I think you've got a lot to offer, Rebecca, in terms of your knowledge, in terms of this as well. But I genuinely, I think you have a different perspective of wealth because of the things that you're involved in. For me, I just kind of like bumble my way through w with a starting gate sort of thought process about what I want to do. Not really that well versed in what I should have done, and if I could have had my time again, Kevin, I'd have. And knowing what I know now, and subject to her being available at the time, I'd have gone back and said, Rebecca, just teach me these things. What should I do? And I would have probably been a you too would have been in a completely different position to where we are now. And the other thing is that, well, we don't need to go into that, but basically I was going to talk about funding the kids' education and stuff like that. There would have been better ways of doing that with the money that I had, using leverage as opposed to using that hard money that I'd earned. So as soon as it'd been paid off to these horrible organizations, universities and stuff like that, bang, gone. And I just think there's I was playing somebody else's game. And I, what I've taken away from this is Rebecca has taught us about you play your game and let the rest of them go hang or kick rocks, I think she said.
And I like Rebecca's approach because she's a little bit unique. Now, nearly everybody you go to for financial advice is doing it because they are going to be able somehow to make money out of whatever you do.
Yeah,
They have a
too.
vested interest in it.
Yeah, that absolutely, and of course that diminishes the value of your money. So, but we could go on, but we shouldn't. It's been a brilliant a podcast with Rebecca Iree, I think it was, probably got it wrong again, but she comes all the way from Austin, Texas, and we'll put more ways in which you can contact Rebecca in the show notes. I've been Graham Arrowsmith.
I've been Kevin Appleby. Goodbye.
Goodbye.